We are now on Chof Aleph.
First side, Chof
Aleph. And we are approximately okay. The new stuff that we start is actually with line 6. But let me just summarize for a moment so that we see the connection to what it's called before.
Okay. The Mishnah
has indicated that a woman, a sota,
even if she
has committed sin, but nevertheless there are
circumstances under which
the Mayim Ha'orim are not going to take effect immediately. Now, how long
is
the period in which, let's say, a grace period? So
there are differences of opinion. We'll see that there are three
opinions. One says a year, another one says
3 years, another one says 3 years.
Okay? And
one of the proofs that they brought was at the bottom of the preceding page, in the top of
Chof Aleph, where he quotes
a passage from
the book of Daniel. All right?
It's written over there that Rabbi Shmuel Omer Shnei Masach Chodesh,
he says, it's a period of 12 months,
that's
how long the zechus, the merit that the woman has,
will
be able to stay the effects of the Mayim Hamorim,
right?
The Yachal Pishen Raya Ladover, he says, and even though we don't have any proof for it, but nevertheless, Zecha Ladover, we do have a hint in the passage that I'm quoting to you from
the book of Daniel
for it. And what is the hint? So
he quotes a pasuk, and of course it's in Aramaic, so it means
that we need a little touch, okay?
It says, Lahed Malko. It
says, O king, therefore,
Malki Yishpar.
Malki
over here means
my opinion or my advice. Let my advice to you, let
my counsel to you be pleasing. Yishpar you recognize from the word Shapir
and so on and so forth, okay? Alayach upon you.
The Chatoich, he says, and your sins, b'tzedakah parok,
you should redeem
by doing tzedakah,
okay, by righteousness, v'avisach,
and, you know, those sins,
you know, the avonis, in other words, the first is chet, and this is oven.
Oven is always worse than chet,
because chet, you could do, as we would say, b'shgogah.
In other words, you make a mistake, you sin in error. But the other one already implies the sins that you commit, the mazen, purposely.
Okay?
So he says, now these are mechan onion, right?
In other words, how can you atone for your avoinos?
The answer is by mechan.
Mechan
over here is the verb, which means
like, you know, the chanein.
In other words, by showing mercy,
onion, to the poor people.
You show mercy to the poor people, this way you can at least, you know, find expiation for your sin.
Okay?
Ein tevei arko lishlosei. And this way there will be a prolongation of your peace. In other words, if you do these things, then you will continue to have peace for a greater period of time.
Uchsiv.
And then the pasuk of Daniel continues, that is the passage over there in the parak, and it says,
all these things happened to King
Nebuchadnezzar because he was the king to whom Daniel was giving this advice that he should be a stalker
and you know, help the poor and so on and so
forth. And then it's written afterwards,
right? And at the end of
12 months. So this is the raya, according to Rabbi Ishmael,
that
at least there will be a prolongation for how long?
For a year, for 12 months,
okay?
So, then the Gemara continues and it says,
La'olam Rabbi Ishmael,
it's true, yes, it does represent
the period of Rabbi Ishmael, but the
Ashkach Karah, but he found another pasuk, the
Omar, which says, with me,
and this is what it teaches us, this is it's written,
Kol Omar Hashem, Ashlosh HaPishay Edom,
right? That the God says, beginning parak of the Sefer
Amos, it says,
thus
saith the Lord, for three sins of Edom, right?
Shlosha Pisha Yedom, and then it says, V'alabah lo ashivenu. But, in other words, I'll tolerate three sins, but the fourth one already, I will not tolerate anymore. All right. So, the question, of course, that they ask at this particular point is, all right, Umay afalpi shein raya ladover sefer ladover. What do we mean that even though there is no proof, but nevertheless there is a hint for it, because the hint would indicate what? If the Nebuchadnezzar, he said, I'll give you a 12-month period of grace, right? And Omo says, I'll shlosho, so if you multiply it by three, so naturally what do you get? You get 3 years, right? So, I remember I said a few moments ago that there's a difference of opinion as to whether it's 1 month, 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years grace period. Okay? So, it says, Yuma Shana Yodhigar, maybe it says the amount of time given to the Goyim would be different. Why? In the Mafke Dina Alayhu, because the Beni Shalaylam isn't as strict with them at this particular point, as Rashi explains. We'll take a look at the Rashi and we'll see. He says, okay.
Right. Why does it say that the Beni Shalaylam, you know, act a little more jumping with the goyim in this particular case? He says, right?
He says, that
the Beni Shalaylam is not in a hurry to punish them for their sins, for Ilam Hazer, because he wants to give them a little bit more of Ilam Hazer,
right? Because obviously what's going to happen near Ilam Haba, then they'll get their punishment. Right.
Okay.
So that's going to be a bigger story.
When it comes to the Yidden, then the Nair in the Torah Be'elam Hazer, punishment comes a lot quicker in this world.
And the doctor came back away, and the Levitical Shalom is a little bit more strict with them right now. So in other words,
the idea is being used over here to simply say that maybe it would only be 12 months and not 3 months.
But nevertheless, I mean, this is not a halakha, you realize that. It's only, different ideas that are being explained over here, to how long.
If she gets pregnant, it's already a sign, that she had never sinned to begin with. Okay?
No, we don't automatically assume that if a woman drinks the Maim Avorim that she's either innocent or she's guilty. If she's innocent, we expect her that the part of the innocence will be right. But if she's guilty, so at first we learned, that as soon as she had drunk the Maim Avorim, her face is going to get green and veins are going to bulge and her eyes will also stick out and so on and so on. But then it said after that,
but not necessarily so.
Why? Because yesh zchus tayla.
In other words, there is merit that can suspend the effect of the maim hamaor in the heart
for a certain period of time. If she's guilty, presumably she's not going to get pregnant. Therefore, she's really guilty, and her good deeds subsequent to drinking.
I understand what you're saying. I would say that, in general, if she does tshuva, and so like anybody, after all, a person, is encouraged to do tshuva. If she changes her way of life, in that case, it would be up to the Beni Shalom to take it into account for that. I don't recall that.
It's possible, but I don't recall that statement.
However, he shouldn't
get off scot-free either,
He should not get off scot-free. He's a sinner, and the Beni Shalom will take care of himself.
In this case, the husband grew up there.
course.
I mean, today we don't have this whole business. I told you it was
abolished 2,000 years ago
because of the fact that
the Chazal said, look, the
husbands, they themselves are acting in a lewd manner or something like that.
So how can they expect,
you know, to put concern in their wives?
Yeah.
Well, I suggested that as another idea, right? I had suggested that, but nobody else says it, but it's
one of my suggestions.
I told the Kiddush once in a while.
Right.
All right. So now the new lesson for tonight. It says, all right, first of all, you know,
they're still going to the idea about
how long is foot. It says, v'yesh tkus teilu gibushanim,
right? That's what the Mishnah says.
That it's possible for merit to suspend the action
for 3 years, right?
So the question is,
and how is this derived? The chustamai.
What merit are we talking about? What merit did she have, you know, that was suspended?
So,
if we say it is
the merit that she has
because of her knowledge of Torah, the study of Torah,
so the question is, so
Eina Mitzuda the Oisa. Okay.
This brings a concept that you find in the Gemara of Eina Zara, and it's repeated several times in different places
of the Talmud.
The idea is that the person who is Mitzuda the Oisa,
in other words, he is commanded by the Rebbeinu Shel Olam,
he has the mitzvah,
and he performs the mitzvah, gets a greater reward
than the person who is Eino Mitzuva the Oseh,
who does not have,
is not commanded to do this, but nevertheless he does it.
The reward is given in either case. But the question is, who gets the greater reward? So the Gemara says that it's Mitzuva the Oseh. He's the one who gets it. Now, in the case of women, the question is she commanded to learn Torah the way men are commanded to learn? Okay? No, but this is in line with what we were discussing, the whole idea, the concept about Melamdo Tiflis, which we'll go into also again. We'll review that.
But
is a woman, according to the halacha, required to learn Torah?
So, the answer is
no.
And this is a Gemara in Kedushin.
Gemara in Kedushin comes to the second paragraph of the Shema. Okay? We had a pasuk over there, but v'libadetem osam es b'neichem l'dabeba, right? And you shall teach your,
if we translate it,
children, that's one thing. But literally,
you shall teach your sons
to speak to them. In other words, you have a mitzvah to teach your sons
Torah.
This is one of the obligations of a father mentioned in the Gemara in Kedushin.
It's several other obligations, like
he's expected to teach his son an umanus, you know, a way that he can make his living in life.
Teach him,
right, also teach him how to swim so that Chas v'Shalom, when he falls in the water, he knows how to save himself or how to save other people, and so on, right?
And so these are part of the
obligations that a father has towards
his son.
Yes, and the other one is to find a wife. That's absolutely correct. Of course, we could also point to another one.
Has an obligation also to circumcise his son.
This is also,
or to redeem him, you know, to be not bend, the wrist, and so on.
But the question is,
if we take literally, we
say, you know, that
you are to teach them to your sons,
then the Gemara over there concludes that you're not obligated to teach your daughters. Now, this is the case, so she is not commanded.
Nevertheless, we'll see from here
that nevertheless, even though she's not commanded to learn Torah, but if she learns Torah, then what?
Shouldn't she get a reward for it?
So this is what they're going to discuss. This is what they're saying right now. Okay? Of course they do.
And as I pointed out, I mean,
it's not only that. There's more than political reasons.
The truth of the matter is that we
cannot conceive today of a Jewish girl growing up in an Orthodox home without a Jewish education. I mean, maybe in Europe, you know, years ago it was possible, let's say, for a girl to learn whatever she had to learn simply from being at home and observing her father and her mother and, you know, learning brachos and so on. But even there, I know that they had Malandim who would come in order to teach the girls.
And of course, I'm talking about in Eastern Europe. In Western Europe, already the idea has spread, I mean, that a girl should have an education. Okay? So, and then of course, you know, when Sarishnira came on the scene, you know, with the Beis Yaakov movement, right, and so no question, there were certain circles that didn't welcome the idea, but today it's just about universal that even in the most extreme Haredi families, that girls get an education. No question about it. They don't all have to study Gemara, that's already a different question. But, certainly. Yep. All right. So, getting back to the text then, okay? The question is then, is it the chutz of the Torah that she is learning? So the Gemara says, it can't be. Why? Because for Einam Tzuvu Yotzei, right? She is not in that category of being commanded in order to do this, and therefore, you know, she gets the reward for doing it. As I said, however, then notice there is a reward, but not to the same extent. Ela is the chutz of the mitzvah. So, if we rule out the chus of the Torah, then we have to say that it is the merit that she has by doing mitzvahs. Everybody has to do mitzvahs. Men, women, children, right? Particularly men and women. I mean, once you become an adult, you're expected to be a person who observes mitzvahs. This is why we use the expression of bar mitzvah, a bas mitzvah. I mean, it doesn't mean the ceremony. It means, of course, the fact, you know, that you're obligated as of this moment, as an adult, to perform mitzvahs. Okay, so they say, now they question this. Why do they question it? They say, "Zechus the mitzvah mibad nekulehai." Tell me, does the merit of a mitzvah that you perform give you as much protection as what? It's in other words, can it postpone, you know, punishment for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? This is the question. The hot Tanya, did we learn a Baraisa which says, Azud or Rosh Rabbi Menachem by Yosef? This is how Rabbi Menachem by Yosef explained a pasuk that we find in Sefer Mishlei, the Book of Prophets. There it's written, a very famous pasuk, it's written, Kider Mitzvah, the Torah, oh, right? But a mitzvah is like literally a candle or a lamp, in which translation usually is lamp, okay? Because, frankly, if we go back and we take a look at the, you know, the archaeology of 2,000 years ago, what did people use? They didn't use candles necessarily. For the most part, they used oil lamps. This is what it is. They put a wick in an oil lamp, and this was it. And this is what the Gemara refers to as there. Yeah. Right, right. Okay. But I mean, afterwards, you know, candles were developed and became more common, so that today, normally, if we see the word near, automatically in mind, we have in mind the idea of candle. Okay? Yeah, well, Hanukkah particularly, they do, right. Hanukkah they do. But otherwise, right. Yeah. But apart from Hanukkah, I mean, the average woman is not going to burn oil lamps these days for Shabbos. I mean, she lights candles. You know. Okay? But that's the reason why I say that, you know, perhaps the idea of lamp is a little bit closer to the actual meaning of the word ner in this particular process. But what's the difference? I mean, there's a kind of, okay? It says that the mitzvah is like a ner, right? And the Torah is like light. And as Rashi explains, the light, it's like sunlight. In other words, can you compare the light given by a lamp to the light given by the sun? And he continues then with his simile over here. He says, Man er edon megido elefisho, just as a lamp gives literally protection, right? Only for a short while, lefisho, in other words, as long as the lamp is burning, so it's helping you, it gives you protection, right? But once the lamp goes out, then that's it. So off mitzvah, so likewise, mitzvah itself, Einam Megidino Tishor, it has a temporary protection. But the minute that you stop doing the mitzvah, then in that particular case, the special protection that you would have from the mitzvah is gone, according to this opinion, okay? But the Es HaTorah, the Or, why does the Pasuk and Mishlei compare Torah to the light, as I said, like sunlight. Loma lechor, to tell you, ma or begin the yoma, just as the light protects always or forever, or it protects the world, but at any rate, I mean, we understand it means that, you know, it, according to another nusach that they have on the side over there, you see, me'ir la'olam, in other words, it gives light to the entire world, in other words, it's brilliant, it's radiant, and it lasts. So, af Torah meginu le'olam. So, Torah also gives you everlasting protection. Now, in what way? So, the Omer, when he quotes another pasuk taken from Mishnah. Pasuk of Mishnah says, this halechecho anfe osach, while you go about your way, it will lead you. The rest of the pasuk is b'shachtecho tishmor alecho, and when you lie down, it will watch over you. Kitzoso kisasichecha, and when you wake up, it will enable you to give forth speech. Okay, talk to him. So, yeah, actually, they do quote this in Pirkei Avos, except that the twist is slightly different. But you're correct; they do mention it in Pirkei Avos. It's also a proof text over there. You find it in the last chapter of Pirkei Avos. In reality, you know, that sixth chapter actually is not part of the Mishnah, right? But this is where it comes from, okay? That's where they're quoting over there. All right, so he explains this passage. He says, for his halachecho, tanche osa, while you go about your way, it will lead you, zehu elam hazeh, right? This is this current, the world in which we're living. Bishachtecho, and when you lie down, Tishmo Alecho will watch over you. So he says, of course, this is Zumisa. In other words, when you pass away, you die, and you lie in your grave, the Torah will still be there to protect you. The Hekitzoiso, Hisisichecho, and when you wake up, it will enable you once more to speak, right? He says, L'osit Lobe. This is in the world to come, in the future, you know, when the Tachias HaMesim take place. So then, once more, the discourse of the Torah will enable us, you know, to have a new spirit. Moshal Adam Shoim Ahalek Mishra Lila. And now they give a moshal, a comparison, to explain this a little bit further. This can be compared to a person who is walking the Isha Lila in the very darkness of the night. Okay, va'afela, in darkness. Because Isha Laila means, let's say, you know, in the blackness of the night and in darkness or something like that, in order to get the flavor that, you know, you have two ideas, all right? Umitsiore, and he's afraid, v'nakotzin, that he'll stumble against thorns, umin hapchotzin, or he'll fall into a pit, umin abarkonim, or from thistles, and also from evil beasts, you know, who could attack him. Umin alistim, and also he's afraid of bandits, because in those days, when did the bandits do their dirty work? At night, okay? The Yeno Yodea Bezadech Mahalech, and at the same time, not only is he afraid of all these things, but he doesn't even know what way he's walking on. Nizdamdo Leavuka, Shel Or, okay? All of a sudden, he finds a torch of light, okay? So, what happens once he has this torch? Then, first of all, Nitzal ben Lakotzim, Umin HaPchotzim, Umin HaBarkonim, right? So, he is freed from, that is, he's saved from the thorns and the pits and the thistles, okay? He's not going to stumble them, of course, he can see them. But, V'adayim Nisiore, Nechayaroh, Umin HaLisim. However, even though he has this torch, at the same time, since it's still night, he's afraid of the attack of an evil beast or being attacked by bandits. The Yeno Yodea Beis Derech Mahalek, and still at the same time he doesn't know which way he's going. Kevin Shorla Abed HaShachar, so when the morning star rises, of course, obviously the morning star actually is still dark, but nevertheless, here it's being used symbolically for when morning comes, okay? Right. So Nitzal B'chayero Min Alist. So he is saved from the evil beasts and from the robbers. Why?
Well, the evil beasts, obviously, we have a pasuk in Borkin Avshi that we say, you know, that, you know, Tizrach HaShemesh Yosefun, right when the sun rises and shines, then they are gathered into their nests, into their dens. In other words, at that point, they no longer roam around, okay? And as far as Listen are concerned, obviously, the bandits are most active at night when, you know, they could attack people more easily, because during the day there are police around and people, you know, to prevent them from doing it. All right. But Ba'adayin, Inu Yudayin, Be'ezidach Mahaleh. Still, however, even at this point, he doesn't know where he is headed, which direction. He Giyal Parashas Lo'achim, when he reaches the crossroads, and we have to assume that there are signs, right, pointing exactly where he's going, right? But in that case, Nitzal Mekulam. At this point, he has been saved from everything. Okay? Now, needless to say, we can understand the mashal, right? We can understand the example that is being given to us. But at the same time, the question is, what is the nimshal? What are we comparing it to, you see? In other words, what started off this mashal? So, all right, let's take a look at the Rashi, therefore. Okay, the Rashi begins over there. First of all, he explains, you see on the side over there, it's certainly Yos Meir. You see that over there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Next line, first he starts into explaining. First of all, words. What a pachotzim? So he says gumot. Gumot means pits. Because the word pachas, right, I mean, you might think you might understand it in that particular sense, right? That the word lahatchis, and so, you know, to lessen something like that. So he's saying that these are pits. Mizdamdele abuka shalor, so he says, kach zohor mikayim mitzvot. In other words, so the person who merits, is able to perform a mitzvah, Nitzal the Nitzat Karana. So at this point, he is going to be saved from at least some of the punishment, you know, that would happen, or some of the danger that would happen, right? Ba'adayim is Yorei Mechaya Yorom and Alistim. However, even though now with the torch he can see the pits and he can see the briars and the thorns and so on and so forth, but nevertheless, he's still afraid that he might be attacked because, as we said, it's still night, right? Attacked by beasts or by bandits, should darken Leilach Balayla, right? Because, you know, they are accustomed to have their activity at night, and what is he afraid of? He's afraid Pen Yifruvo, right? He's afraid that they will attack him. Dixir, as the Pasuk says, Toshes Choshes Tehi Balayla, right? That when you, Rebbeinu Shelolam, bring about the darkness and night comes, then at that particular point, all the beasts of the forest begin moving around. And then he says later on, right, when the morning star arises, he says, the print of my Gemara over here is really bad. Yeah. The Afkan Zochel Torah, and even here, if he has, you know, merited Torah, then Nitzal Menachetim in Hayesuim. He's going to be saved from sinning and from suffering. Ba'adayin in the Yodea, but he gets, you know, he still doesn't know yet where he is headed. Shemo Yechpenu Yisrael, maybe his Yetzer Hara will have dominion over him. Libatel, right? It will cancel out all the good things that he's been doing, right? The Yashiv Alav Yetzahara for honor. And, you know, so it will bring about, you know, sin and punishment. But he Giyad for Rosh Hashanachim, when he gets to the crossroads, the Shom Hikir is Darko, and there he can recognize where he is headed. The Afkan Higiyah Layom, and now also day has come. So naturally, what is he talking about? He's talking about, he says, Hamisa, death. The Lo Perash Min HaTorah, in other words, now that he has come to the day of his death, and throughout his life, he never departed from the Torah, ad yom otso, right, to the very day that he died, then nitzal mikulam, he'll be saved from everything. In other words, all the, you know, the merit will stand before him, b'olam haza and b'olam haba. Okay? Yeah. All right. Then we have another marshal to bring out the same idea. Getting back to our text over here. Yeah, okay. The Rebbe said a lot of good things, no question about it. Okay. Dovarachim. That's what the Dalai Lama says over there. In other words, another interpretation. Aveira mechaba mitzvah. Aveira, in other words, a sin can cancel out a mitzvah. The yein aveira mechaba Torah, but a sin will not cancel out the Torah that a person has studied and accumulated. Shneimar, as the pasuk says, and this is a quotation from Shir HaShirim, it says, "Mayim rabim, many waters, lo yuchlu echabos esravo, cannot extinguish love." Now, of course, what is love over here? He's not talking about love, he's talking about Torah, okay? So, in other words, no matter what the mayim rabim are, nevertheless, we'll never extinguish the Torah that he says. As Rashi says, again, we can take a look. It says, Avera Mechaba, that's the next thing that we have, okay? Avera Mechaba, in other words, a sin will extinguish what? Schar Mitzvah. In other words, the reward for Mitzvah, it'll cancel out that one. The Yein Avera Mechaba, but sin will not cancel out Schar Mishor Asak Torah, Kodem Lachem, person who learned Torah prior to that. So Alma, so we see from this then what? That mitzvah lo magna kulayhai, that the performance of a mitzvah will not give us the same amount of protection as the study of Torah. The Torah study is even, has greater significance even than the performance of mitzvah. Not that we shouldn't do mitzvahs, but the question is, Torah is something, of course, that should do what? It should lead us to continue a life of mitzvah, you understand? So that therefore Torah is more important from this point of view. Alright. And then he says, Laim Rabim, he says, what the pasuk is, Lo Yuchel Lechabes Esavo, cannot extinguish the love. He says, Zu Torah. What is the word love over here? This refers to Torah. Dixir, as the pasuk says in Shir Hashem, Heviyani El Beis HaYayin, the Digloi Alai Ahavo, and Yayin is so. It doesn't say yayin sodin over there, but yayin, it's the Gemara in Sanhedrin and other places where it says, kevon shenichnas yayin, yotza sod, that when you become inebriated with wine, then secrets escape. Now, what does it mean? If you take a look and count, what is the numerical count of yayin? Yud, yud, nun, that's 70. And how about samach, vav, dalet, the word sod? Also 70. So in other words, when you become inebriated, then the secrets go out. That's the pshat in that one. But not, as we know, pshat, you could have pshat, and you could have drash. The drash is that the sod, this is the special knowledge of Torah, right? So the diglo halava, in other words, the Rabbeinu Shalom's love is expressed for us through the special knowledge that we learn through the study of Torah. Okay? So far, yes. Omer Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says, Mitzvah be idnov, the osik bo magno matzah. Says, when you perform a mitzvah, at the time that you are occupied with it, then it protects you and it saves you. But the idlo de lo yosikbo, but when you're not occupied with the performance of a mitzvah, right, then agune magno, yes, it gives you some protection. It's not that it's worthless, of course it has some protection, but atzule matzlo, but it will not save you completely. Okay? All right, let's take a look at the Rashi again to see how Rashi understands this. All right, that's, of course, the next one. Okay? I see I left off one Rashi over there. All right, after Digloy Rabo, and so it says, Omar Rav Yosef, he says, for Yoilom, it says, always, Megina al Hayasun Harbe. It will protect you from many suffering, much suffering. Ma'ayinu Megina, but what is it that it will not protect you from? He says, Dika Omar, as the Talmud Chacham said, it will not protect you min ha'chet shelo yiskefenu yetzer hara. In other words, the performance of a mitzvah should give you some protection, but at the same time, you have to realize that you're constantly battling what? Constantly battling the yetzer hara that wants to entice you, to not to do mitzvahs, but to do aveiros and do everything yourself. Right. Yeah, right. That's the pasuk says, right. Mitzvah be yidlo the asik bar. So mitzvah at the time when you were occupied with it behind you, the tishah. In other words, it's a temporary thing. Or you said before that it's be yidlo the tishah, right? The yom magdo ben hayisun the matzah is a ra shelo yach shilenu lechay. It will give you temporary protection from yisurim, in other words, from suffering, and also from the yetzahara that will not. While you're doing mitzvahs, then you're not going to suddenly be attacked by the Yetzer Hara. But the Idul Yosek Bo, but if you're not engaged in the mitzvah, then in that case, Mishadigma HaMitzvah, right, you finish performing the mitzvah, the Yeno Yosek Bo, and you're no longer occupied with it, then in that case, Aguna Magdim in Aperonis, yes, it will save you from punishment, right, but Asura Limatzna, but it will not save you completely from other things. And of course, the Katani Baraisa, and we learn the Baraisa that Avera Mechaba Mitzvah, right? So the Avera, that it cancels out, so to speak, literally, it extinguishes the mitzvah. It's Lav Milahogin, Min Hayisurim Ka'amar. We're not talking about protection from Yisurim, Elo. But on the contrary, we're talking instead about the reward that we'll get. So again, the idea is do mitzvahs but study Torah at the same time, okay, so that you have double protection. Alright. Alright, so we said mitzvah at the time, right? As long as you're occupied with it, right, it will give you protection, and when you're not occupied with it, it will not, it'll give you protection, but not save you completely. But Torah, bein be'idin da'asikbar, bein be'idin da'asikbar. Torah, on the contrary, whether you're engaged in it now, or whether even if you're not studying Torah at the moment, but what you have already built up, a reserve from previous Torah study, right? So, Magno or Matzah, it will give you protection and will save you. So, Matzah for Rava. So, Rava now is not satisfied with this interpretation about, the value of Torah to save you, because he says, I can show you two guys in the Bible to whom it didn't help. Who are they? So, he points to the example of Eliyahu. He says, Doeg Vakitoga. Doeg was the herdsman of King Saul, right? Doeg HaEdomi. And the other one, Achitophel, he was the counselor that David had. Okay? And if you remember, right, Doeg went around, and he carried out the command of King Saul to slay Kahanim and things like that, so that even though the Torah says, the Torah doesn't say, but even though our Chazal say that Doeg was learned in Torah, but obviously it didn't save him at this particular point, because he went and he did the wrong thing. And Achitophel, who, even though he counseled King David and a couple of things, but nevertheless, what did he do? He joined the conspiracy of Avshalom against King David. And according to the Gemara in the Sanhedrin, the question whether these two guys will get Olam Haba because of their actions, okay? So, that being the case, he says, look, here are these two characters, Doeg and Achitophel, right? Milei Askei B'Torah, didn't they study Torah? So So Amaylo Higina Alayhim, then why didn't it protect them? So Elo Amar Rava, but rather Rava says, the answer is Torah Be'idno, the Osik Bo Magno Matzla. The Inan Le Osik Bo Aguni Magno, but Atzula Le Matzla. So Rava comes and he says, study of Torah, as long as you're engaged in it, then it will shield you and it will protect you. But when you're not studying it, then Aguni Magna, it will give you protection. After all, you have to get, you know, you get Sar from the Torah that you've studied, but Atzulei Lo Matzla, it's not going to save you from punishment if you do evil, you see. Yeah. But mitzvah says bein be'idlo darasik bo, bein be'idlo lo yasik bo. But when it comes to a mitzvah, whether it's at the time that you're engaged in it or whether at a time when you're not engaged in it, aguni magno, it will give you protection, but absolutely mitzvah. So in this case we see that Rava has like a contrary opinion to what has been said before. Until now, the brunt of the discussion has been what? That Torah will give you like permanent protection, so to speak, right? And whether, you know, at the moment you're engaged in it or not engaged in it. But the mitzvah is only as long as you're engaged in it, does it give you the protection. But when you're not, then you'll get some protection, but not. It won't save you completely from the Yetzer Hara, etc., etc. This is what we said. Rava seems to turn it around and say quite just the opposite. That mitzvah gives you greater protection than Torah, right? Of course, why is he saying that? He's saying that in order to justify the fact of what? That Doeg and Achitofel, even though they were learned in Torah, but nevertheless, it didn't say that. Okay? Rabino comes along, Rabino Omar, he says, in truth, Zechus Torah, actually, it's the merit of Torah. That what? That saved who? That saved the Sota from immediate results, you know, the drinking the Maimon Goren. Right. Udeka Amret, and your argument, he says, that Eino Mitzuva V'yoysa, that she's not commanded, you know, to study Torah, and she's doing it, and she's studying, it's Nehi, the Fekudei Le'nifkedo Be'agra. Nehi, the Fekudei Le'nifkedo. Are you arguing with me about the fact that she has not been commanded to study Torah? But nevertheless, Be'agra, she gets reward for what? The Makrin Amastin B'naihu. That she encourages her children, she raises them, she encourages them. The makrin over here to learn mikra, in other words, to learn Torah, right? Umasniyin, and then to learn Mishnah, in other words, to learn Torah Shabbat and Torah Shabbat, right? And not only that, but not run the hulig of Raihu, but they wait for their husbands, Ad Osim Bei Midrasha, until they come home from the Beis HaMidrash. And of course, there are times when the husbands would go off for an extended period of time in order to learn in the yeshivas. Yeah. Yeah, correct. So we're talking about a good woman. I see your point, Arthur. When did the Yetzer Hara have an opportunity to work, right? Yeah. Okay. Milo Palgun and Bahadaihu, says the Gemara. Don't they share together in this course of the Torah learning? In other words, husbands and wives, children and their mothers, they all share in it. It's not, you know, that he gets all the reward and she doesn't get anything. On the contrary, she gets the reward because she is the helpmeet and she does everything that she should do for her husband and for her children and encourage them to learn Torah so that she gets the course through that as well. Okay. Well, the Gemara comes back again to the Moshul about you reach the Parashas Drachim, right? You reach the crossroads. says, my Porsche Drachim. So he says, Abba Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda says, Ze Talmud Chochem Yerba Misa. But we're talking about over here is a person who learns Torah and the day of death. In other words, once he reaches the crossroad in life where he's facing his final moments and he has devoted his life to Torah, he studied Torah, so in that particular case, we know that he'll be going in the right way. In other words, he'll be going to Gan Eden. Okay. Rab Nachman by Yitzhak Omar, he said, Zeh Tanit Chochem B'Yiras Chet. He says the crossroads here represents the Talmud Chacham, the person who studies Torah, and the time that he has to demonstrate his fear of sin. In other words, he faces temptation, and it is because of the Torah that he has learned that teaches him what is the right choice to make. This is the Parshat Rachim. Marzutra Amar. Marzutra came and said, Zeh Talmud Chacham, right? V'salkalei shvatatah aliba dehilchasah. This is the case of a Talmud Chacham who his teachings or his learnings are according to the halacha. In other words, that when it comes to the crunch, he's very, very happy that he has learned all the traditions correctly and he's not going to give any wrong interpretations. So this is the crossroad. The Gemara now continues by saying Dover Acher. In other words, interpretation, a different interpretation of what we were saying before about Avera Mechava Mitzvah, the Ein Avera Mechava Torah. That a sin can literally extinguish a mitzvah, in other words, cancel out a mitzvah, but a sin cannot cancel out Torah. In other words, Torah has far greater, more permanent value than an individual act or the mitzvah. Omer Rabbi Yosef, so Rabbi Yosef said, Roshe Rabbi Menachem Bar Yosef Lahai Kro, Kisina. It says, Rabbi Yosef gave an interpretation, and this is the interpretation, Omer Rabbi Yosef, right, the Roshe Rabbi Menachem, he says that Rabbi Menachem Bar Yosef gave the following interpretation to a verse which we're now going to discuss, and he says Kisinai. In other words, it was such a terrific interpretation as if it came down from Mount Sinai itself. What is the pasuk? Well, it says V'ilmolei drasha doeg v'achikopel hachi l'rotu v'sar dobek. It says that if only doeg and achikopel had interpreted this particular idea, they would not have run, they would not have pursued literally after David. In other words, they would not have turned against David and gone over to David's adversaries. And what is it? Dichsiv, they said, Lamor, and according a verse in Psalms, which says that they say as follows, Elohim Azavo, God has deserted. Right? So in other words, they take this pasuk that we find in Tehillim, wherein we find that the adversaries of King David say God has deserted him. My Dorush, and how did they interpret this verse? It says, so the answer is that they refer to a verse that we have in the book of Devarim, where it's written over there, V'lo yireh v'chor evas tova, that Rabbeinu Shel Olam should not see anything unseemly in you, but of course unseemly in this case is, we know that the word ervastov is usually associated with something which is a sexual transgression in nature. V'hein enon yodin, and they did not know, sha'aveiro mechava mitzvah, right, that a sin can cancel out a mitzvah, but v'hein aveiro mechava torah, but a sin will not cancel out the Torah. Now, naturally, what are they referring to over here? The answer is that they're referring over here to what David had in his relation with Bathsheba.
he sinned. There's no question about it. He committed a sin, although there are other interpretations to say that in reality, because Uriah Hachiti, Uriah the Hittite, who was the husband of Bathsheba, had given her a get before he went off to war, so that in reality, and of course the get would be retroactive to the fact that as of the moment that he went off to the battlefront, then she was no longer his wife, and should he return, then in that case the get would become invalid. But should he not return, then the get is valid from the moment that it was given to her, which, as we said, it was given to her prior to his going off the war, because he did not know whether he would come back or not. So that, therefore, technically we could say that David didn't sin, but still we know that in the eyes of the prophet Nathan, for example, it was a sin. There's no question about that. So they took a look at this verse which says, that, you know, God cannot countenance any sin committed along these lines that we've said, and therefore they were of the impression that Elohim Azovah, that God had deserted King David, and therefore they went and they joined his adversaries. They did not realize that all the Torah that David had learned and that David had taught, that all this Torah would be able to atone for the sin that King David had performed during his lifetime. And therefore, this is like a proof for the fact that while an Avera can cancel out the performance of an individual mitzvah, but when it comes to the performance of, that is, to the study of Torah, then it will not cancel it out. And they take a look, and of course it's based also upon an interpretation of a pasuk that we find in Shir HaShirim. It's written over there in Yitenish, call home based on Be'avo, that if a person would give all that he possesses for love, Bo'z Yeruzalo, they would contemn him. Okay, so the question is, what does it mean? So Omar Uloi says, well, he gives a different interpretation. Let's get back just to finish the business with King David, because what we're saying is that since David had so much ahava, which we interpreted before in the sense of Torah, so that therefore we should never despise the importance of Torah. This is what Ula is now going to present in what he has to say. He says, Omar Ula, Ula said that Boz Yeruzalo in Yiten Ish Kol Beso Kol Hom Beso Be'ahavo, that if a person gives all his possessions you know, for the love of Torah, then people can, you know, have, they despise him. And he says, on the contrary, this is not so. And he brings the following example. He says, Lo Kishimo Achi Azario Lo Kerabi Yochanan Devedesio. He says that a person who studies Torah should not be like Shimon, who was the brother of Azariah, nor Rabbi Yochanan, who lived in the prince's house. Now we have to understand, Shimon made an agreement to be supported by his brother, and so therefore he didn't have to do any work while studying Torah. This is the idea that they're now stressing, that when you study Torah, it's not only enough that you have to devote all the time that you possibly can to study Torah, but still at the same time you have to do it even if it means in the presence of poverty. And here Shimon the son of Azariah had a brother who was able to support him, so he could devote his full time to it. And therefore what Ula is stressing is that the level of the Torah is not to be placed on a par with the same level, as we'll see in a moment, of Hillel. Okay, he brings another example, of course, and that is Shevna. And what about Shevna? So the answer is that again, he. Excuse me. Okay.
So not like Shimon of his brother of Azariah, not like Yochanan, not like Yochanan of the prince's house. Naturally, he was supported, you know, by the Nasi, who was able to subsidize him very nicely. And so therefore, they became Talmidei Chachomim, they studied Torah, and of course the Torah that they have will stand them well. But they would have had even higher Torah merit if they had actually also at the same time had to go out and to work and then to produce the same amount of Torah learning. So this is the idea. So he says, Elo ki Hillel v'Shevta, but rather you should be like Hillel and Shevta. Hillel and Shevta, he says, the Chiyosav Rabdimi, so when Rabdimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, he explained this. He said, Omar, he said, Hillel v'Shevta achi harihabit, that they were brothers. Hillel osak the Torah, Shevta ovad Yisrael. So Hillel spent his time learning Torah, while Shevta, his brother, became a businessman. So finally, Omale, so Shevta said to Hillel, Tana Rova Zifra, why don't we combine forces and we'll share the merit that you get for Torah? You can share your merit with me and I'll give you a little support. So Yatsasa Bas Kol the Omra, then a Bas Kol, in other words, a heavenly voice, came forth and proclaimed, in Yitain Ishis Kol Kon Beso, that if a person gives whatever he has for love, nevertheless, that is for the Torah, as we said, then this is the way a person should be, that he should give his all for the Torah. Paul, for everything else, with the Chodesh, began this week. Okay, all right. Tonight we begin then on the top of Chaf Aleph of the Beis, and we have to go back again to the Mishnah that we had, because at this point we're going to see that they're going to take the Mishnah phrase by phrase and give an explanation for what it's all about. You remember, the Mishnah began by talking about the whole idea of Schus, and then at the very end of the Mishnah, it said the following things. It said, first of all, that Rabbi Eliezer Omer, that Rabbi Eliezer says that Kol Hamalamed Bitei Torah, that whoever teaches his daughter Torah, it's Lomda Tiflis, or as the Gemara suggests, it should really be interpreted as Ki'ilu Lomda Tiflis. It's as if he teaches her Tiflis. And the question is, what is Tiflis? So one explanation, the one given by Rashi, is that it's nuts. In other words, it's going to lead to immorality on the part of the woman. Why? We'll see when we resume the discussion based on the Mishnah in just a moment. But we also had a different interpretation that I gave you at the time when we learned this in the Mishnah on Dabchov, namely that Tiflis could be understood as something which is not so important. In other words, he's teaching her something which is not very important for the life of a woman, because a woman should really concentrate upon those things which a woman is required to do in order to create a home and to have a husband and the children and so on who are happy. We devoted at that time, I remember, also quite a discussion about the role of education for women. And we pointed out that even, let's say that in the days of the Talmud, there were people who felt the way Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah did in reference to a woman's education, but this certainly is not true. Even as early as the Rambam felt it was not right, and of course in our own day we know that a woman should have a fine Jewish education, and that would include various subjects which will enable her to not only lead personally a Jewish life, but also to help to create the kind of a home for her husband and her children. So we're going back now to the top of Chaf Aleph Amid Beis, and at this point we'll see that, you know, some of the rabbis dispute the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah.
First of all, the Gemara wants to know, what do you mean tiflis? It says tiflis. What do you mean? If a woman studies Torah, is she going to study, is she going to learn how, let's say, to practice nus? Or she's going to learn immorality? Is this what you're trying to tell me? Salkadate, is this what you imagine? Elo emo, but rather ki'ilu lomdo tiflis. It's as if she learned something which was not that important for her own personal life as a Jewish woman. This is the idea. So Rabbi Bohu says, my time with Rabbi Eliezer. What is the reasoning behind what Rabbi Eliezer has to say? Rabbi Eliezer ben Azai, please. And Rabbi Eliezer was a different gentleman. This is Rabbi Eliezer ben Azai. When you see a Rei Shalach over there, you don't know whether it's Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Eliezer. But when you go back to the original text, you see it's Rabbi Eliezer. All right, Dichsiv is based on an interpretation that he gave to a pasuk that we have in the book of Mishnah, the book of Proverbs. In Mishnah it says, Ani Chachma, I am wisdom, Shachanti Orma, and I dwell with like cunning. Problem is, of course, you know, what does the word Orma mean? Now, if you remember, here the interpretation is based upon what? Upon, let's say, the verse that we have, you know, concerning the Nachash, the snake, you know, with Adam and Eve. If you remember, it's written over there, the Hanachosh Hayo Orum, the Kol Chayat Sasodeh, right? That he was more cunning than all of the other creatures, all the other animals that the Rabbeinu Shalom had made. So Ormo then in this case means like slyness or cunning, okay? So in other words, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azai teaches, he explains the Pasuk, Ani Chachma, that if I learn Chachma, right, then in what then what happens? Shachanti Ormo, then I literally, I dwell with or I acquire Ormo, certain cunning. And as he says, Kevin Shenichdesa Chachma Be'odom, right? The moment that Chachma enters a person, and incidentally notice it says Odom, it doesn't say Isha over here. You notice? In other words, it's a general statement applying to men and women. Yeah, but the Adam over here is used in the general sense of human beings, men and women, right? So nichnasa yimei armumis, so cunning enters together with it. So in other words, this is the reasoning behind Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, the statement. The Rabbanan, but how about the rabbis who disagree with him? Because what did they say? They said that a woman should learn Torah. She should learn because if she learns, she will, you know, acquire zechus, she will acquire merit, and that will enable her, you know, originally was in connection with the problem of the sofa, right, that it would be zechus tola, that even if she were guilty, but she drank the mayim hamorarim, but it would not take effect, certainly not immediately, because of the fact that she has merit which would outweigh, you know, the immediate application of this. But as we see, I mean, the rabbis disagree with him. Yeah. Right. All right. But to remember, this was the subject of vacation also, as to whether, you know, if a person performs a mitzvah, what protection does it give him as compared to the Torah that he studied? And what did we learn? We learned that mitzvahs, you know, that they give protection, but only temporarily, if you remember, whereas Torah is far more permanent in its value, okay? So obviously, if I don't know what the Rebbe had to say in the Tanya lesson that you had, but obviously the feeling was, you know, that Torah is the more important of the two. But nevertheless, again, I want to call to your attention that there's another Gemara that says, Gedola Torah, right? Hamaviyah l'day maser. In other words, Torah is great in that what? It brings about people to live, you know, a life of the right action. In other words, to perform the mitzvahs, you see.
This is the basic reason why the Torah is considered more important, because it will lead a person, you see, to live a life of Torah, mitzvahs, mass and favor, and so on, as we keep on wishing each other, right? All right. So, at any rate, the Rabbanan says, "Hi, ani chokma mayadile." So tell me, what do the rabbis do after all? You have a pasuk. Rabbi A interprets it in one way, right? And Rabbi B interprets it in a different way. This is the way a drash is, okay? So what did they do? How did they drash? How did they darshan, we would say? So he says, "Ayani chokma mayadile." What did they do with it? So he says, "Miboyele v'chidrabi Yosef ab Chanida." They needed, in accordance with the teaching that was given by Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina. The Omer Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina says, "Ein divrei Torah miskayimim elo b'mi shemamid atzmo orum aleihem." Say that the words of Torah will not find permanence except in the case of a person who is willing to strip himself of everything, even through poverty and so on, so that it's as if he was stripped bare. I mean, he has nothing else except the most bare necessities in life, because he is devoting all his life and his energy and so on to the study of Torah. And how did Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina derive this from the pasuk? So he says, it's written, "Ani chokma," right? I am chokman. Of course, I mean, this is here he means not just plain wisdom, but he means Torah, right? Shachamti Orma, right? And what is Shachamti Orma? Shachamti Orma means that I dwell even in nakedness, literally. In other words, as I explained a moment ago, even with the barest necessities in life, but my life is devoted to the study of Torah. Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, "Ein divrei Torah miskayimim el b'mi shemesim atzmo k'mi sheino." He gave another interpretation, but it's somewhat similar to the one that we just had. He says that the words of Torah will not have any permanent value except for a person who is willing to make himself as if sheino, as if he is nothing. In other words, he suppresses all his egotism, all his desires, and wants nothing more than to devote himself to the study of Torah. Shenemar, and he brings the following pasuk in order to prove his interpretation. It's a verse in the book of Job, Sefer Iyov, where it's a very beautiful chapter. Happens to be chapter 28 in the book of Job, and there's a description of different activities that people do, farming, mining, whatever they're doing, and the basic theme which is repeated again and again is V'yachochma me'ayin timotzei. Where can wisdom be found, right? Of course, eventually the answer is that the wisdom that can be found in every activity should be the wisdom, of Yiras Hashem and so on. But notice, me'ayin timotze. Me'ayin in Hebrew means from where. But if you know Hebrew, you also know that the word ayin or ein is what? It's the negative, right? It's the negative. So in other words, ha'chokhmah me'ayin timotze. Wisdom will be found in the person who negates everything for himself in life except the study of Torah. Interesting interpretation. No. It sounds like it, but the only thing is, reminds me of a poem by Shlomo Ibn Gabirol, wherein he speaks about the fact that he came to a big party, a Suda and so on, and what did the Balabos do? The Balabos, he watered down the wine. He added water and water and water to it because he was very stingy in serving his guests. So in that case, you could say that, the yayin is like yayin. It's nothing there. but I'm not doing justice. Come. Right. Not doing justice to the poem.
You want to make sure nobody would get drunk.
Right.
You missed us. He saved himself.
Yeah. He compares, you know, for example, in the course of the poem, that among the markets that happened in each of them, of course, remember that the waters of the Nile, right, turned into blood. But here, of course, what happened? The wine has turned into water. Right. And then he says, you know, I'll throat like it's a fardea. Thirsty for water. And so it's a very cute little poem. I don't know if you ever heard of Shlomo ben Gabriel. He was one of the great poets of the Middle Ages. And this is what we call, you know, part of the golden period in Spain. A great Talmud Chochem, a great poet, he's a philosopher, etc. You had him, you had Moshe ben Ezra, you had Yehuda HaLevi, then Abraham ben Ezra came in a somewhat later time, and so on. Yeah. Okay, getting back over here. Rabbi Yehoshua, the Mishnah quotes Rabbi Yehoshua as saying that Reitza Isha, let's take a look again at Tav Chof, where the Mishnah text is found, towards the end of the Mishnah over there. Okay. Okay, Rabbi Yehoshua Omer says, Rotsa Isha Bekav Tiflus Metes Kabin Ufrishas, which we translated at that time, that a woman would rather have just a little bit of, you know, financial means at home. The Kav, you know, is a small measure, right? She'd rather have that, but with Tiflus, meaning with a loving husband, a loving children, and so on, she would prefer that rather than to have Tisha Kabin Ufrishas. In other words, more than to have, you know, to possess a lot of material wealth, but at the same time to have a husband who is cold to her and, you know, that he'll have no warmth in family relations. You understand? So this is what he's saying. So, in other words, as you notice, the word tiflis is being explained by him in the sense of what? That, you know, the love of a husband and a wife for each other. So, much better, he says, a woman would much rather have fewer means but greater love than the other way around. Okay? And they don't have any further comment on this. Okay? And then the Mishnah continues. Back again to Chof, and we'll see that over there. Okay. Ruha Yoimer, in other words, Rabbi Shua was fond of saying the following. He says, Chosid Shaita, a pious person who is a fool, the Rasha Orum, and a wicked person who is sly, the Isha Purusha, and a woman who is a Pharisee, umake is Purushim, and the blows literally of Purushim, hare elam avale elam, these are people who destroy the world. Now obviously this is a cryptic statement, and so we have to now take it phrase by phrase, and this is what the Gemara is now going to do. So first of all, what is a chosid shaita, right? And that's what the Gemara wants to know. Heichi domi chosid shaita. What is a chosid shaita? Give me an example, they said. Okay, so he says, Kagon, for example, Deko tova itzaso benahara, a woman was drowning in a river. The Omar, and this guy says, Lav oirach aralis takulibua, va'atzula, it's not proper for me to take a look at her and to save her. In other words, he is so pious that he doesn't want to look upon a woman. He is a chosid shaita, and he's among those who the Mishnah, you know, calls mevaleyelam. They destroy the world. Because this, needless to say, this is already carrying the chassidus to, you know, the worst degree, okay? So that's a chosid shaita. Echidam and Rosh Hashanah, and what? Give me an example. They you say, you know, what is a Rosh Orb? In other words, a wicked person who is sly. So Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan gave the following example. He says, Zeh hamatim devorov ledayan kodem shavoy baldin chaveiro. A guy who is sly enough, and therefore he is a Rasha, if he does what? He goes to the judge. He has a din Torah, right? With another guy. Two litigants, right? So he goes to the dayan, the judge, right? Before the other litigant comes into court, and he's Matim Devorov. He explains his case to the judge. Now, Gemara and Sanhedrin condemns this kind of thing because, you know, it's written over there that you have to listen, you know, Bein Odo and Chaveiro and so on and so forth. In other words, you're not allowed to hear the words of one of the litigants without the other litigant being present. The judge? The judge could definitely disqualify himself. Sure, it's not right.
What makes that a rule?
The answer is because maybe the judge would decide not to disqualify himself. You understand? All right, we'll take a look at the Rashi too over there and see what he has to say over there. Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, this is what he's doing, you see. So he is a Rasha Arun. He's a wicked person. Yeah, he's smart, but he's a Rasha. No. It's a litigant. The person who's doing it, not the judge.
The judge is allowing him to do it.
Well, then naturally, then in that case, it's not right. All right, let's take a look at the Rashi for a moment, okay? Shematim Devarav Ladayim. You see that over there? So it says, the Mishanikba'u Belev Hadayon Sha'arezichu Yisov Devarav Shalzeh. It says, if this guy talks to the judge and he makes an impression on the judge of the merit of his own case, right, then caution is alkon, then it's hard for the judge to rid himself of the impression which has already been planted in him. So the hare are muso, right? So this is proof of the fact, you know, that he is cunning, the rashahu, and he's also a rasha. She'over alo siso she'mashav. He violates, he transgresses the commandment which says, you shall not cause to hear a statement, you know, which is untrue or a vain statement and so on. But that applies not only, to the person, it applies to the judge too, because the judge too should not listen to any of these things unless both of the parties who are contesting, you know, he came for the for a din Torah, you know, are there so that he could hear both of them, and at the same time, each of them could hear the tainus, you know, could hear the arguments, the complaints of the other person, so that they know, if it's not true, how to refute it. But here, the judge already is being predisposed by the validity of the arguments of this very cunning guy, so that he cannot rid himself of the impressions, even if he decides that he's going to be impartial and listen to the other guy too. You understand? That's the reason why. Well, we'll see that there are other opinions too as to what is a Rasha Arun. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, right. Yes, right.
That
absolutely. Yes.
But this is like...
Okay. You don't like it, so we'll see another interpretation. Good enough. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a clear case over there that certainly advising Amnon to commit rape upon his own half-sister over there, and, Yeah. Okay. Rabbi Bohu has a different example. Rabbi Bohu Omer, he says, Zeh hanoisen dinor li'oni lahashlim lo masayim zuz. Okay. Ditnan mi sheyesh lo masayim zuz yiton leket shecho feyo maseroni. Okay. I'm going to start with the latter part first. Okay. I'll stop with the latter part, then I'll come back to the former part of the statement. because without knowing what the latter part says, it's hard to understand the former part. Okay. Latter part is a quotation from the Mishnah in Peah. In the last chapter of the Mishnah in Peah, they deal with such things as public charity. Okay? And who is entitled to take various types of public charity that existed in those days. Okay? So, the Mishnah there says that whoever has 200 zuz, right, then he's not allowed to go and take leket, shikha, peya, maiserani. Alright, now what are all these different things? So, leket we know. Leket is that at the time of the harvesting, when the harvester, you know, cuts and he gleans, as we say in English, okay? Let's say a stalk of grain or something like that, right? And he has a bunch, and let's say one or two fall from his hand, then in that case, he's not allowed to pick it up. Torah says he's not allowed to go and to glean afterwards, you know, lo selaket acharecha, and that's the reason why we call it leket, okay? But it belongs to the poor people. So that the poor people would go out after the gleaners in the field, and whatever had dropped from their hands to the ground, this is what they were entitled to pick.
How would you translate that amount of money
in today's money? 200 zuz? I would say, let's say $500, $600. But that doesn't mean anything. The question is, you see, how much would a zuz buy? And no, you know, from Chad Gadya.
The original nickel and the
American
nickel to buy
them. What could you buy over there for Trey Zuse, for two Zuse? You were able to buy a kid, a goat, an animal, right? No, so you can't go and buy, let's say, a piece of meat at the butcher for 2 cents or something like that. Right, and not even for $2 today. Right, okay. So you can't really judge on that basis. Just as for example, be closer at home. What a dollar was worth, let's say 50 years ago, compared to the dollar today, and you'll see that the dollar has gone down in value as compared to what it was once worth. I mean, this we know. I mean, things that you were able to buy for a penny, a nickel, a dime, and so on, you know, back in the old days.
My father bought a house for $7,000.
Okay. Right, right, absolutely. And you were able to go to the movies for a nickel or a dime back in the old days. Now, if you go to the other side of the river over there, you're paying, what, $7, $8 for a ticket or something like that. So that's why I say you can't even begin to compare. You know, I have an attic full of old stuff, which Ann wants me to get rid of in the worst way. She's right. But I take a look, old bills that I paid. I see, what did I pay for oil a few years ago? My God. It was half, a third, a quarter of what I'm paying today for a gallon of oil.
And
so
they thought it was a lot of money.
Right, right.
I got a paper from the from the 60s.
Yeah.
You should see the prices in there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right, right. Of course, my salary too, I mean. It was not magnificent in the old days. I was working a whole year for $3,000 a year. So.
But you could go a lot further than how we do the same today.
Okay, so anyway, that's why when you ask me how much is a zuz, I can't really give you an exact figure. Okay, but as I say, the law is that if a man possesses 200 zuz, he's not allowed to go and pick up these gleanings, the leket, right? Or the shikha. Shikha is if a person, let's say, puts down something, and and also grain or something like that, and he forgets about it completely. In that case, that's shikha. In other words, literally something that's been forgotten. Okay, he's not allowed to do it on purpose. But if he did and he forgot all about it, then that becomes shikha. Okay, so the poor people were entitled to that. Or peya, we know. I mean, that's a corner of the field that was left standing that did not belong to the balabas. Instead, it belonged to the poor people. And then maiserani, if you remember, that there were three tithes. Maiseris, okay? Yeah, okay, right. Maiser rishon is not truma. Truma is given to the kohen. That's something else in addition, okay? But maiser rishon was given to the levi. Okay?
What you say is
which is the one that's not counted for Maishas Truma?
What?
Oh, Maishas
Truma. No, Truma, hold it. You have all kinds of things. Okay, let's not confuse these terms, all right? Truma is given to the Kohen. Okay? He gets the Reishis, the Gomcho, the Rosh of Yitzarecha. In other words, the first of the grain and so on. I mean, you know, that's given to the Kohen, okay? Then you have three types of Maiser. There's Maiser Rishon, Maiser Sheni, and Maiser Shlishi. In other words, there are three types of Masros mentioned in different places in the Torah. The Maiser Rishon, this is given by the average person, you know, to the Levi. That's his sustenance. The Levi depends on that for sustenance, okay? And that, in a 7-year cycle, every year except, you know, the year of Shemitah, you have to give Maaser Rishon, okay? Now, in turn, of course, the Levi does have to give a tenth of what he gets in Maaser to the Kohen. That's called Trumas Maaser, okay? If that's what you're referring to, I don't know. But that's what the Levi has to give to the Kohen, all right? But the Truma itself, or they call it Truma Gedola, this is given by, you know, by the householder, is given to the Kohen, okay? All right, so that's Maaser Rishon. Then you have Maaser Sheni. That is the person actually takes that to Yerushalayim and eats it over there and enjoys it. If, let's say, the fruits are going to spoil before he can get to Yerushalayim, then in that case, right, he has to redeem it for money, and then when he goes to Yerushalayim, he has to use the money on food and drink and so on and so forth, okay? And then you have, now that was given in the first year, the second year, the fourth year, and the fifth year of the 7-year cycle, okay? Maaser Ani was the tithe that was given to the poor people, and that was given in the third year and the sixth year instead of the Maaser Sheni, okay? So, again, in order to qualify for this tenth of a person's, you know, produce with a year and giving it to the poor, but you have to establish what is a poor man. You know, like today, the same idea sort of, you know, like with welfare, let's say, right? At what point is a person entitled to welfare, and at what point is a person no longer entitled to welfare? You understand what I'm saying? All right, so, that being the case, 200 zuz was considered the cutoff point. If you had 200 zuz, then at that point you were not allowed to take any kind of public welfare as an ani, as a poor person. You're no longer in the category of being an ani. You are now, you know, a person of mean. Okay? All right. So, let's get back now to what did he say. Okay? He said that, Barbabo said, Zeha nosin dino leoni lahashtem lo masayim zuz. Let's say this poor man had actually enough property, wealth, or something that it's 199 zuz. Okay? Now, this guy, who is a Rosh Orum, he's aware of it, so what does he do? He gives him one zuz, a big humanitarian, right? Gives a lot of charity to this guy, gives him one zuz, and what happens? The guy automatically can no longer collect anything else, any of the Leket Shikha and Maaserani and so on, okay? So, Ditnan, as the Mishnah said, the one that I started with, Misha Yeshno Masayim Zuz, right, if you have 200 Zuz, Leto Leket Shikha Feyo Maaserani. Now, Hoyelo Masayim Chosedinur, let's say that you did have 200 minus one dinar. In other words, not, you know, let's say 199 you had, right? Then in that case, afilu elef nostim lo ke achas hareza yital. If a person were to give this poor man 1,000 zuz at the same time, that's what the ke achas mean, right? then in that case, the poor man is entitled to accept it. So if you're going to be a big humanitarian or something like that, then in that case, give a substantial contribution, even if that will eventually, you know, put him, but at least he has something substantial to work with, instead of just, you know, the bare minimum, okay? So he is also, he's a Rosh Aharim, according to this interpretation. Rabbi Yossi. Right, right, and then deny him everything. And then to deny him his benefits, right. Just enough to disqualify him from any benefits. Yeah.
His motive is wrong.
Yeah, his motive is wrong. Right. Okay. Rabbi Yossi Omar, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yossi said the name, Rabbi Yochanan, he says, Zeh Hamatzi Eitza Limkor Binachasim U'otim. Okay. Literally, it means this is a person who advises somebody to sell when there is only very little property. Now, what kind of very little property are we talking about? So that we have to go back to the Rashi. Okay? You see where it says in the Rashi, bin chosim u'otim. Okay? By the way, what Rashi said in the previous statement about the Hashlim Masayim Zuz, he says, okay, so this guy can no longer collect, you know, any further charity. Why? Because he has 200 zuz. But at the same time, he has many dependents. So what is he going to do with them? Understand? For himself, okay. But what about for his dependents? How is he going to take care of them? All right. Now, getting back over here. In the Chasim Muatim, Ditnan, we have a Mishnah which in Bava Basra, which says, Mi Shemes, if a person dies, okay, the Niach Bonim Uvanos, and he, you know, he has sons and daughters who survive him, right? So bizman shanachosim irubim, when he has a lot of you know, property that he leaves to his children, habonim yirshu v'habonos yizonim, then the rule is that the sons will inherit the property, but the daughters have to be provided for, you know, by their brothers. They have to take care of their sisters as long as the sisters remain unmarried. You understand? This is the rule. Okay? Now, what happens if nechasim u'otim? Let's say that the man has only a small amount of property when he passes away. Then in that case, habonus izonum, the daughters have to be provided for. The habonim yishalab sochim, as far as the sons are concerned, they can go out and go begging. The idea being this, a woman is a modest person, and it's, you cannot subject this woman to the shame of having to go from door to door in order to try to beg for tzedakah. You understand? Whereas a man, you know, he could stand this business a lot better. And that's the reason why the daughters have to be provided for first, and then the sons can go begging. All right, so this is the situation at the moment, right? All right, you're talking now about a case...